are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Wednesday, May 2nd, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Amanda Marcotte, author of Troll Nation. Meanwhile, is this Scott Pruitt's last week? And if not, why not? U.S. at the border overrun as 25 of 150 migrants from Central America are processed for asylum. True story. Protests rage in Puerto Rico over austerity. Arizona teachers rally at the Arizona Capitol for more education funding. 18 states sue Trump to maintain CAFE standards. Meanwhile, the White House refuses to release the number of civilians killed in counterterrorism strikes across the country, says more or less the same as last year. White supremacists found guilty in a Charlottesville beating. And Dave Rubin, call your office. A libertarian think tank study shows no campus free speech crisis.
Any gay people here?
A Trump's old doctor's office raided by Trump goons. Doctor now says that Trump dictated his clean bill of health letter.
I'd also add that I have an unusually high life expectancy and put that hit.
Surprise, surprise.
All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome. It is a Wednesday. Some people refer to this as hump day. It is the middle of the week, as you know. Just a reminder, this program relies on its members for its very existence. And you can become a member by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Pennies a day, as always. If you can't afford it and you want to get access to the fun half, just send us an email at majorityreporters@gmail.com. But if you can and you listen on a regular basis, we could use your support. I don't know what it is about the month of April, but we've had an abnormal... I mean, I've heard this across the board a little bit, but a number of people having financial problems... Maybe it's tax season.
It is the cruelest month.
But if you are in a position to support the show and you enjoy it on a daily basis, join themajorityreport.com. Folks, apropos of our interview with Amanda Marcotte, who incidentally, of course, is a senior political writer for Salon.com, on how the right became Trump worshiping monsters set on rat effing liberals, America, and the truth itself. There was the annual March for Immigrant Workers' Rights in Seattle yesterday, May Day, and there were counter protesters there from the group The Proud Boys. And The Proud Boys are a band of Proud Boys who are assembled by Gavin McGinnis. And what, I mean, does anybody have an understanding of like what they do? They just get together and they're just guys? Is that what's going on?
They try not to jerk off.
No, honestly.
No. I'm not joking with you. That's a major part of what they do. What's the matter?
They try not to masturbate.
They seriously try not to masturbate.
Do they do this together? Do they all get together
masturbate? No, they try to go extended periods of time without doing it.
To maintain their virility.
And to
keep their chi.
I think, yeah, sure.
But so they aside are, they from have what, also... Sorry.
Yeah, well, wait, but aside from trying to not masturbate, I'm seriously trying to get this. Aside from trying to not masturbate, what else do they do?
I mean, it's easy to make fun of them because they are very pathetic, but they have shown signs of also being a violent street action gang.
But
gang makes them sound too cool.
Between being a almost violent street action gang,
I think
and what I don't understand.
Sam wants to know what the core brand proposition
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
Oh, now you're speaking my language.
They are Western chauvinists, not racist, mind you. JK, they're totally racist. They don't like feminism. They like traditional Western man values.
So
they're
it's one
soft
of those
alt-right.
He-Man.
Yeah,
soft,
alt-light.
Soft
alt-right.
Yeah, but I don't even like... But they're a group. I mean, they're self-identified. So they're like the
well,
He-Man...
Well, he calls it a fraternity.
Okay. So it's a roving fraternity.
Yeah, and they have done some violent stuff, too, okay. Which is, you know, perhaps driven by their sexual frustration. Who knows?
Well, I mean, you save your chi, is what I understand, when you don't do that.
This is what I'm talking about when I say socialists have better sex. Gavin McGinnis doesn't even want you to touch your own dick.
Well, there you go, ladies and gentlemen. Gavin McGinnis has a personal request for you. But these guys apparently were counter-protesting the May Day celebration. And one of them grabbed a sign from the people who were marching.
Looks like refuse fascism.
It's a refuse fascism sign. And he is going to rip it up right now. And the people he took the sign from started to videotape him because apparently... You know, well, maybe he doesn't have the finger strength because of what their edicts are. But go ahead, let's see this.
Trying to rip it. You're so close.
They're mocking him now.
Oh, the other way. I think I gotta do it again. There you go.
Pause it. Now, I should just say that if you can't see this, the guy is like folding the sign now as a way of getting a crease in it so he can tear it. And he's being mocked mercilessly by the people he took the sign from. Like, fold it this way. Do it that way. Trying to get help him out so he can rip it. But he's still hanging in there. Go ahead.
You've been working. You've been doing a lot of armor.
Maybe this actually
right?
really should be. Interpreted this is the not masturbating struggle. A lot of frustration.
This is a very educated city. There's a lot of engineers in this city. You can get a lot of help.
Oh, now here comes the second guy to come in and help him. I can't do it, man.
Do it.
He gives it back to him.
No, Amazon's down the street. They got a lot of engineers who can help you. I am putting this to bus. Oh, my God.
Oh. He can't rip it. Why does he just walk away?
Just stop.
Because a girl is talking
genius,
to him.
Why do you take the lid off?
Yeah, he's following
okay,
her direction.
He's like all right, a deer in the
Here's
headlights.
The point. Okay, stop it for 1 second. So the reason why the guy was tearing it up was he wanted to throw it away, but it has one of those lids with a round circle, the trash can, that are meant to keep people from putting big bags of trash in there. And so they've now recommended that he just pull the lid off. And the funniest part is he doesn't want to listen to them. But he also wants to throw it away. Oh, continue.
Take the lid off. Pry it open. There you go. You needed a liberal to help you with that, dude. You're too fucking stupid to figure it out on your own. So throw it away. No, please.
Now he puts the lid back down
because
he won't
together.
Take it that way.
Come on, we're bonded now. Come on, you can do it. You're so close.
Oh, this guy must have just masturbated.
You're so close. Try the other one. Look, there's no lid on
He's
that one.
He's also
Come
wearing
on,
fingerless gloves, which is important to know.
There's no lid on that one.
It's
on.
Really,
look
he's
for
examining
the
it now, and he's
They're
trying
not so
to
proud
rip
of you
it.
Right now.
Now he's folding it up.
Don't you want to make him proud?
And now he's walking away.
Oh,
he's walking away
it.
With it, folded up. And then he thinks, like, I'm going to dump it into this garbage can right over here.
Just leave.
Stops, and then he's like, I can't do that because they're going to...
That was beautiful.
It's full.
There you go, folks.
Good day, madam.
More
that
like
is...
ashamed, boys.
Yeah,
am
exactly.
I right?
Not
I
so proud.
I return to my home to attempt not to masturbate and post racist things on Reddit now.
Like, all of MAGA and alt-right internet would have exploded with soy jokes if that was, like, a left-winger doing that.
Unbelievable. Slightly embarrassing. Now, what happens to a Proud Boy who can't rip up a sign? Does he get some type of like Proud Boy demerit, or
hopefully,
does he get an extra week where he's not allowed to touch himself? How does that work?
He gets beaten.
I don't understand. I know you guys are being totally serious that their thing is to not masturbate.
It's
totally
apparently you can serious. Only masturbate in the presence of a woman. Mm. Otherwise, it's like, you know,
it's called the CK.
You're sapping
exception.
Your vitality or something like that.
I see.
I mean, they're basically squares with tattoos.
Yeah, they're guys who work at GameStop but got a tattoo.
Like they like traditional marriage and like that sort of thing. They want to do all the things their parents did, but with like tattoos and like watching
There's an interesting history to this that we covered on TMBS. But yes, without getting into detail, no, because the reason that they stopped masturbating was because of a black comedian that they started following, which is sort of doubly ironic.
There is a certain kind of chivalry involved, like in the taxonomy of the alt-right. Some of them just like hate women and want to kill us. These guys, it's more of like a benevolent sexism.
Yes. Oh, well, that's very sweet.
They want to protect
us. That's very, very sweet of them. Chivalry is not dead. Folks, also, we should tell you that, of course, the deadline for Dennis Miller to... present his jokes about Michelle Wolf has passed. After we speak to Amanda Marcotte, we will go over it. We have made a major reporting breakthrough in this story, and I just want to let you know. I mean, this is a bit of a tease, I guess, but we have
the fact checkers on it, making sure everything's...
We did one of the best reporting jobs I think we've done in these offices on digging up what the situation is with Dennis Miller and the anticipated really brutally mean jokes about Michelle Wolf that he was had promised. We will get to that later in the program. First, we will take a quick break, and when we come back, Amanda Marcotte. We are back, Sam Seder, on the Majority Report on the phone. It's a pleasure to welcome to the program Amanda Marcotte. She is a senior political writer for Salon and author of the just released Troll Nation, How the Right Became Trump-Worshipping Monsters Set on Rat-Effing Liberals, America, and the Truth Itself. Welcome to the program, Amanda.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
So now, Amanda, we are, I mean, because you're a longtime blogger, and I guess maybe I remember from Pandagon days. Was that right? You were a Pandagon?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So for years, like I was never a blogger per se, but have followed this theme that you write about in this book that really culminated in with Donald Trump. I mean, give us, where do you think, let's go to the origin story of this. Where did this notion, well, let's start with this. What do you mean by trolling? And The thesis of your book is that conservatives have abandoned their any type of, I guess, principled conservatism for really an entirely different project. Tell us about that project, and then we'll get to where this started to grow, I guess.
You know, if I was going to put it in one word, I'd say revenge. That's the project now, right? It's culture war in a lot of ways, but it's also this sort of culture war that's become nihilistic, as it's become incredibly apparent, I think, to conservatives themselves that they can't really win the arguments about politics, culture, taxes, you name it, on the merits. And so instead they've really kind of embraced this politics of nihilism and vengeance. And it's so much more about, you know, I'm sure listeners have seen people on the right talk about getting liberal tears, you know, triggering the snowflakes, various, you know, forms of arguing that their kind of purpose in their politics in life is just, you know, owning the liberals, getting to liberals. And it really is not about trying to win any kind of rational or political argument anymore. It's really just about trying to punish liberals for being right.
And when do you think this started? I mean, I remember, you know, this seems to me to be, when do you think this started as a sort of a strain within the conservative movement?
Well, the book focuses more on recent years, but I really kind of do trace it back to Rush Limbaugh, I would say, you know, in the early 90s. But it's really accelerated after the failures of the Bush administration, I would argue. I think the Bush administration, for better or for worse, was the last gasp of a Republican Party that was trying to, the last gasp of a Republican Party that was trying to advance an agenda as an agenda. Now, I'm not defending the Bush administration's agenda. I mean, it was terrible. Their attempts to sort of dismantle Social Security, the Iraq War, you know, some of their deregulatory agenda. But they did at least advance it and try to make arguments for why they should be taking these kinds of actions. And they tried to run on those arguments. And you just don't see that anymore on the right. Instead, what you see is vote for me, it will anger the liberals. I mean, Rick Scott literally campaigned on that. I don't know if he's changed it, but a couple of weeks ago I was looking at his website. And when you Googled his campaign website, it was, basically, vote for Rick Scott. He angers liberals.
This goes through. So Limbaugh introduces this notion, right? And I mean, I remember where they would write, where they would walk around with Club Gitmo T-shirts specifically as a way of. I don't think they used the word triggering. Liberals, but they with that purpose. And I'm just sort of like going up into the wind up until we get to sort of the post-Bush years. But Breitbart, it seems to me, also was a major force in sort of developing this brand of conservatism. Because here's a guy who was one of the biggest media figures on the right and had no policy preferences. I mean, if you asked him about policy, he would say, I don't care about policy. It was all culture to him.
Andrew Breitbart?
Yes.
Yeah, I do write about him in the book because I do think you're right. He's an interesting figure. His entire purpose of existence was targeting liberal institutions and trying to take them out. Right. And to be clear, you know, he wouldn't say it, but he was extremely racist as a person. And that guided a lot of his choices. But, you know, he went to take out Acorn. He did take out Acorn. He tried to take out some other liberal institutions. And a lot of it, you know, and James O'Keefe has kind of carried on in that kind of vein. But a lot of it really was simply about holding up liberals as targets for being taken out and almost nothing else.
And so, So tell us how it develops in the most recent era, because I think much of this in your mind starts with Gamergate. And I recall, you know, around this office, there was one of my producers was particularly interested in Gamergate. And I thought, like, this is not even politics. And then 3 years later, it seems to be like all these guys are in the White House. Explain to us what Gamergate was.
So Gamergate was this very bizarre, like, online controversy that flamed for a few months, where a number of women in the video game industry were targeted for harassment campaigns by mostly men, but, you know, also some other women that were kind of joiners. And there were elaborate rationales that the Gamergaters would offer for targeting these women. But ultimately, it was very obvious what the pattern was. The women that were targeted for being feminists, for being people who offered criticisms of video gaming, sexism, racism. And in some cases, they were attacked just because they felt like video games could be about more than shoot 'em ups, but, you know, could have some kind of artistic or literary merits, right? And it was a culture war in the sense that these were a bunch of young men who clearly felt like video gaming was a refuge for men where they didn't have to deal with women's demands for equality, and they were having that taken away from them, they felt. And so they just targeted the women they thought were taking away from them. So, you know, as I say in the book, Gamergate, which happened, I guess, in 2014, I want to say, was an effort to make gaming great again, as it were. And it really was a precursor, because I think a lot of the figures that really came up, most notably Milo Yiannopoulos in Gamergate, ended up becoming, you know, major organizers of the alt-right. And in fact, I think Milo Yiannopoulos had this pretty tremendous insight that these angry young video game nerds could kind of be organized into an online version of the modern day brown shirts. And I think he unfortunately has been pretty effective at getting that done.
I want to loop around to political correctness and talk about that for a bit, but how is the line drawn? I mean, and maybe I'm asking a little bit of a meta question here too. I mean, because obviously, look, the election of Donald Trump, there's two different stories. One story is like, how did he win the election? And that argument is, you know, could involve 12 different factors and involves, you know, less than 100,000 votes. The other story is, how did Donald Trump basically get all Republican votes? You know, 95% of the people who voted for Donald Trump also voted for Mitt Romney. So if he only gets the swing votes from Obama that put him over the edge in a couple of states, and that's all the votes he gets, he doesn't win 1% of the vote. How does like Gamergate translate into the entire Republican Party supporting this guy and him winning in the primary?
That's a really good question, and I think is one that people don't ask it a lot, and why I wrote this book in the first place, because I think there has been this excess attention to, you know, the extremely small number of swing voters. My theory is that this mentality of trolling, this notion that political correctness is the greatest threat to America, all these kinds of things have basically consumed the Republican Party, that your average Republican voter, you know, not just your angry 24-year-old alt-righter screeching at women online, but like your 65-year-old, 75-year-old Fox News viewer, also is really obsessed with the idea that political correctness is ruining America and that that's what needs to be defeated to make America, quote unquote, great again, right? And, you know, obviously political correctness is a code term for anti-racism, feminism, you know, LGBT rights, things like that. But it's for the right, it's also, it's not just those things, but it's also their anger that liberals have moral authority on this subject and that they can't deny that. And so they just are angry about it. And they turn that anger into being, to claims that they're being oppressed, that they're being censored, that they're being bullied. And they just feel that way because they can't counter liberal arguments about these things.
You know, it's interesting because there was a just the other day, another study came out and by the, I think it was Pew, that was talking about this notion of people being dislodged from their social status, that social status was a driver of the votes that Trump garnered in the election. And I think it's the second study that has indicated that. And certainly whether or not that was determinant or not, let's put that aside for a moment. But certainly that's a big part of this, right? I mean, nobody denies that this loss of status. I mean, it seems to me that political correctness is sort of like the last comfortable thing that you can critique for these folks. So you don't actually, it's really more code word. It's like the vapors of racism rather than the liquid form.
That's a really good way of putting it. Yeah, and I call it the political correctness argument sort of a bank shot, right? They can't defend racism and or sexism or any of the isms, right? They can't defend these things on their own terms. So what they'll do instead is take umbrage at the criticisms of racism, sexism, etc. So political correctness is what they take umbrage at. So they can't say racism is good, but they can say people who are against racism are fun-killing, censorious nannies, right? And so I've seen other people call it the anti-racism. and that's, it's turned into kind of a whole troll, right?
And so what is I don't know. What is the antidote to this? I mean, is it just a question of you got to ride it out, or how does society deal with something like this?
Boy, if I had the answer, someone who was reading my book the other day just told me that they really liked the way that I end it without like having a very good answer and not trying to pretend I have all the answers, right? What I will say is I don't think we get any closer to the answer by ignoring this is the problem. I don't think we get any closer to the answer by trying to pretend that these complaints about political correctness have any weight, or trying to pretend that economic insecurity is the main driver of this situation or any of that. I think if we're honest about what we're up against, it's going to be a little bit easier to come up with solutions. And I think that the past year and a half, as terrible as it has been, has given me some optimism that that's actually working and that's actually happening. Because I see, you know, like Indivisible, I see the Women's March, I see people voting in, you know, record numbers in special elections. And what I see is people, like, the penny has dropped, I think, with a lot of liberals, and they realize that what we're up against is not good faith conservatives who just differ in opinion. What we're up against are a bunch of, you know, vengeance-minded, angry people. And the only way to fight back is to actually try to seize power and just try to, like, get control of the situation. That's literally the only thing I think could ever work. And we can't change their minds. You know what I mean? So what we can do is organize and just try to make it so that they don't have the levers of power.
There was, and I can't remember exactly what survey this was, but I think we had some graphs from it at the beginning of the week, which show that over the past 2 years, the biggest change in disposition is that Democrats, broadly speaking, are less interested in compromise. And I imagine that's probably a function of the awareness that you're talking about, that they realize, like, we and this is something that I feel like there's been subsections of the center to the left coalition that has been talking about, you know, the idea of bringing a knife to a gunfight type of situation, and that maybe we're seeing this. Do you think this has permeated the media sufficiently? I mean, I think, like, I agree with you that there's definitely, obviously, much more activism on behalf of parts of, like, let's say, the Democratic coalition that have been basically sleeping through midterms and off-year elections and whatnot. And there's some inkling that there's an under, but do you think it's, like, going to hold? Do you think that, like, and I don't know, I'm just saying Jennifer Rubin for just as an example, I'm not talking about her specifically, but do you think that Jennifer Rubin's out there are going to maintain this disposition when, and hopefully, you know, if and hopefully when Donald Trump is out of office?
Absolutely not. Jennifer Rubin is going to snap right back into who she was. In fact, she hasn't really changed. I think Never Trump conservatives, the vast majority of them, they just don't like how gross he is. But they don't even really, I think, argue with his kind of worldview, which is this sort of policy be damned, it's just about defeating the liberals mentality. I mean, I think some of them are still stuck in the, like, kind of old school Reaganomics, like, worldview. But even that, I think, is secondary to this kind of trolling mentality. They just don't like Trump's style. But as far as, like, the rest of the mainstream media, I mean, I am deeply concerned that things are going bad, very badly. You know, I think that, I mean, I don't want to be too much of an Eeyore here, because it is true that the Washington Post especially, but also the New York Times, has been on top of some corruption scandals. They have been dogged on the Russia story. They've been dogged on the EPA story, et cetera. But I do see a complete unwillingness in the mainstream media to engage the idea that this is, that Trump is not an anomaly, that he is a symptom of a larger problem, and an unwillingness to sort of address that problem. And I think, you know, the response of so many mainstream journalists to Michelle Wolf at the White House Correspondents' Dinner, just speaking a few basic truths, and the way they all got the vapors over that says to me that they haven't learned anything about what, you know, about the larger problems in the past couple of years.
Do you think there's something structural with that, or do you think is it something structural? Is it something just the type of person that is going to go into, I guess, a mainstream political journalism? And why is that? Like, why has it been so difficult to sort of just assess, like, here's a guy who wiped the floor with every type of Republican. If you were to go and do, like, you know, the classic film where all the Republicans get together, and we have this type of Republican and that type of Republican, and he beat all of them badly, and they've all basically fallen in line. What's it going to take, if it, or is it even possible?
I don't think it's, as far as the media goes, I do think that it's structural. The sort of mainstream media is, like, kind of conceit about itself is that it's not ideological, but they are ideological in one sense. They believe in this myth that Americans are basically good, right? And therefore any differences between us, that all Americans are basically good, and that any differences between us must be, you know, in good faith, right? And they believe this despite the fact that there were people who, like, set dogs on anti-segregationists and things like that in the past. So if that didn't change their mind, I don't know what's going to change their mind. As for like Republican politics, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, as far as Republican politicians go, I mean, I hope that the big takeaway from my book is that this rot is throughout the party, so none of this surprises me.
And all right, so let me just backtrack just a little bit and ask you what salience you think the argument, and we had Angela Nagel on this program, I don't know, I guess it was 4 or 5 months ago, maybe, I'm not sure. But in her book, part of her argument is that the alt-right is at least in part a function of part of like the more shallow aspects, I guess, of the so-called social justice warrior culture. How much of that do you think has been fuel to this fire?
I honestly don't give that much weight. Those kind of arguments, I think, concern me on a couple levels. One, they deny conservatives autonomy. Like, they deny that they are autonomous people making decisions and paint them as purely reactive. And two, I think that there's an underestimating of how much, like, white men specifically, and white women also to a certain extent, really do have a good reason to want to maintain a social order that keeps them at the top of the pecking order, like the hierarchy, right? I think, it, you know, the notion that, I mean, I don't want to overstate her argument. It does seem to me that she is kind of suggesting that there was, that a lot of the alt-right was sort of a formation of feeling like social justice warriors, for lack of a better term, like, overstepped their bounds and were too provocative, right?
Right.
But I don't know that there's any way to threaten somebody's privileged status in society that doesn't provoke an angry reaction. So I feel a bit like that the only answer is just let them have their way, and I refuse to accept that answer.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So, I mean, there's a certain... to the extent that there is a, I guess, a catalyst or an inciting event, it's that other people besides white men and white women to a certain extent are not just emancipated, but are beginning to take some power in society.
Yeah, and there's no way that happens without a reaction. And I know that people wish that there was, but again, I point back to the 1960s as an example. You know, the civil rights movement was met with violence, and in atrocious violence, and they deliberately organized in the like least provocative way that they could, and they still were met with violence. So I think at a certain point, you have to say, the reason people get mad is not because of the way you're doing things, but because of what you're asking, and they do not want to give it.
And so, okay, and so we have this sort of zero sum situation with in terms of power. Well, in terms of like the economic aspect of this, I mean, you touched on this just briefly, but just expand a little bit on why you or what your perspective is on the economic deprivation or frustration in that regard. Because, I mean, there is, I mean, clearly, right? And I would tie into this. I mean, it's hard to, I guess, sort of like disaggregate this stuff. But when you see towns that are devastated by opioid addiction, or when you see, consistent loss of wage growth and whatnot. How much can you attribute the rise of, I guess, of Donald Trump to that?
That's a really complicated question. And I feel like some of the answers people have been coming up with to flatten it out. And I don't want to deny that these towns with their shrinking jobs and their shrinking populations aren't contributing to it. But I do think one thing that's being overlooked is that our economy is changing. And what is happening in a lot of these rural areas is that people are giving birth to to and raising kids there who then turn 18 and leave. Right. And a lot of, and those kids, you know, as one of those people, I am personally in one of those people. I grew up in a rural area, white conservative parents, and I left and I live in New York City now, chase the opportunities and the lifestyle I wanted. And I think that there is resentment there that is cultural as well as economic, right? And I think that that can't be overlooked. And it's frustrating because I think you see the same thing happen in England with Brexit, was a lot of the older white people living in kind of more rural areas of England voted for Brexit because they resented that their kids were moving away and getting jobs in Italy and Greece and Germany, and they want them to stay home where they can see their grandkids every week. And I know that sounds kind of crazy, but I think that, you know, it cannot be underestimated in terms of how people are considering their life circumstances and their current circumstances. And I guess that's the biggest takeaway I want people to have from this book, is that culture matters. Things like family and power and status matter. It's not just money. And money is important, but it is far from the only thing.
Amanda Marcotte, the book is Troll Nation, How the Right Became Trump-Worshipping Monsters, set on rat-effing liberals, America, and truth itself. That is that's quite a subtitle. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break and then head into the fun half. Oh, wait, no, we're not. We've got to do the Dennis Miller stuff. All right. Yeah. Now, we have done a lot of there's been a lot of reporting that has gone into this. Perhaps maybe the greatest amount of reporting we've ever done on this show. Maybe I would even say possibly we've done more reporting for this than the aggregate of all reporting that we've done on anything in the past. Now, as you know, well, let's put up the countdown clock, because at this point it's expired, right? But
you are.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you know, over 72 hours ago, I guess, I don't know the exact, maybe it was 96. I like how everybody's just looking at me. You got four people in here all doing nothing to compute this. 96 hours ago, Dennis Miller wrote the following tweet in response to Michelle Wolf and her performance at the White House Correspondents' Dinner. What a horrid human being Michelle Wolf is. I'm going to read up on her over the next couple of days, and I will have a few brutally mean jokes about her by Wednesday. I want you to keep this this graphic of the tweet at hand, Matt, because we have done some research. As you know, we were waiting. We had a countdown clock for several days.
We had speculation.
We were anticipating what that joke, what those few jokes would be. And as you can see now, wait, we have 45 minutes left? How's that possible?
No, it's counting up now.
Oh, it's counting up. We're actually negative 45 minutes away from the release of these few remaining jokes. Now,
Each balloon is a bop, bop, bop.
I want to get into how we did some of this reporting. We went to Dennis Miller's Twitter page. And if we could bring that up as part of our investigation into the jokes that we were anticipating, Dennis Miller's Twitter page is at Dennis DMZ, the Dennis Miller zone, I guess, is the way that you would refer to that, at Dennis DMZ. And looking for those jokes, and all that was there as of May 1st was Flower picking it like Keith Hernandez, a Stanley Cup playoff tweet. This is where Dennis Miller decides to just tweet about sports. We can talk about that another time.
I don't get it.
I think we ought to, actually. I think that Dennis Miller's whole NFL sort of catalog is something we're going to need
to
explore.
We're going to have to put that in the barrel when we get Andy Kindler here. However, what we did is we also noticed, and this is our chief investigative reporter picked this out, that he actually had a tweet above that one that was just 2 hours old. And I think at the time that we looked at it, it might have been even 15 minutes old. It is now a pinned tweet. And I'm going to read it to you. An all-new episode of the Dennis Miller Option is now available. So we've gone from his website is Dennis Miller Radio. He is the Dennis Miller Zone on Twitter. And it's the Dennis Miller Option is his latest podcast. I wonder if there's been a lot of like intellectual property arguments that he's had. Is now available this week.
What does that even mean? Is that a takeoff on the public option?
No, it's a football thing where the quarterback can decide whether to run or to pitch it to a halfback.
Oh, doing the Miller play. That's good. He was talking about a...
run the Miller option.
I see. Okay.
Watch an Army-Navy.
Yeah.
Dubious about the sitting
there. You're sure that it's a reference to football? I mean, do you know this
for
a fact?
Well, I guess. It's not a reference to the public option.
Yeah, it's definitely not the public
option. It's definitely not the public option, but it could be something like...
Unleaded.
You don't have to.
it's a gas pump option.
I mean, isn't that red?
You don't have to listen to it. Then he goes, Christian DMZ, and what we did is we then followed the link that's embedded in the @ChristianDMZ. And we found out that ChristianDMZ is the professional Sancho Panza to Dennis DMZ. Sancho Panza, of course, was Don Quixote's, if I'm not mistaken, right-hand man.
Oh,
and so you can definitely see the similarity in their perspectives.
Because they like the Mets?
And... I'm Sancho Panza.
Futile.
Yes. And, okay, so he goes on, Christian DMZ and I discuss the White House Correspondents' Dinner. And then North Korea meets the possibility Trump Nobel Prize. Listen free at Podcast One. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's what we did. We anticipated that,
of course,
jokes, ladies and gentlemen, that he promised to deliver... We sort of made up the 12 o'clock p.m. Eastern Standard Time deadline. But in fact, he beat it by 15 minutes. It was 2 hours ago, and he beat it. And so now we're going to hear a clip. And ladies and gentlemen, this is pretty earth-shattering stuff. Because we have been sitting here waiting for the joke promised and put the tweet back up over the face of Dennis Miller. Don't totally block it. Can you put up both? Yeah, just put that. Yeah, okay. Okay, great. We have been waiting for the joke or the few brutally mean jokes about Michelle Wolf. And in fact, I mean, this is like probably like almost...
Kaiser Soze.
This is Kaiser Soze. This
it's
is
Zen.
Like,
it's
this
Kaiser Soze. It's Hidden Genius.
You think you're going to, to get a, some type of the golden chalice from the Wizard of Oz, and then all of a sudden the curtain is pulled back, you find that your pursuit was actually inside yourself.
The journey you started was already there.
Exactly. Let's play this this tape.
Very scared for Michelle Wolf right now.
Mm. All right, what are we going to talk about today? Christian, how are you doing? Christian Blatt, my sidekick.
Thank you. I'm doing great.
Now, pause it. Can we just go back? I want you to notice one thing. It appears that Christian is actually in the studio. The sidekick is in the studio. And the host is on the phone, it appears like...
And I just want to say the preceding 2 minutes is them talking about people complaining about the crappy quality of Dennis Miller's voice.
Oh, is that right? Okay.
We can play that with Kindler.
Okay. Well, we'll play the other part, but this is the important part.
More Miller content than anybody else in popular media in the last several decades.
What I'm also interested in is Dennis Miller introduces his sidekick as his sidekick, and his sidekick has to make the argument that we've known each other for a long time, which I found interesting. But go ahead.
All right, what are we going to talk about today? Well, Christian, how are you doing? Christian Blatt, my sidekick.
Thank you. I'm doing great. I've known you for quite a while, but more importantly, how was your weekend, sir?
Well, my weekend was fab, other than getting fully roasted on Twitter for a poorly written joke about how little known Michelle Wolf is. Now, my Pittsburghese, I have to really overpronounce the L in Wolf because I usually say Wolf, and my kids look at me, what are you kidding me? You can't hear that. But
Wait a second. So we thought that Dennis Miller was going to have a few brutally mean jokes about Michelle Wolf, but it turns out the joke was already there.
That which you are seeking is in front of you.
The joke is what a horrid human being Michelle Wolf is. I'm going to read up on her over the next couple of days. That's the joke. In other words, I don't even know who she is.
She's not particularly well known.
Well,
anyone?
Also, the Wolf part, I think, Hughes, very close to your prediction yesterday, Sam.
Which was what? Oh, that he was going to do?
He was going to do some sort of a joke about a dog, maybe a wolf, some kind of play on her last name.
That's possible. But wait a second. Let me just read off. I got to get back. Where's the laughter track? I can't find it. So the joke ends up being, though, that, in fact, he didn't know who she was. Like, who is this? Who is she?
The joke you seek is on your feed, though you do not see it yet. Like much of my humor,
it's confusing.
My jokes are not revealed as jokes until painful explanation
later. It's confusing because, as my understanding of comedians is, professionally they do research, you know, targets to do jokes about them.
Well, the confusing part about this actually is not just. And I know a lot of people are going to say, it's the joke's not funny. Well, that's true. Of course, like, who are you is probably one of the most common retorts by people who can't come up with something on Twitter. Like, and you are. but here's another thing, and I don't want to get too pedantic about joke writing, but what one of the things that makes jokes funny is where you put the punchline after the premise. So in other words, it would be, what a horrible human being Michelle Wolf is. In fact, you wouldn't even want that because you don't know who she is. But you would say, like, I'm going to have a few brutally mean jokes about her by Wednesday after I read up on her and find out who she is. That's how you would tell that joke if you wanted it to be interpreted as a joke.
I have an 80s reference ready after I do some research and find out what Michelle Wolf is.
Now, also, we did some further investigation to get a sense of how likely is it that Dennis Miller didn't know who Michelle Wolf was. She is a correspondent on The Daily Show. Daily Show is not as popular as it was with Jon Stewart, but it's still fairly well known. But how in touch with popular culture is Dennis Miller to make an assessment that it's funny that he doesn't know who she is or just sad? Well, here's a little bit of a clue.
And then I did look up, I don't know, The Handmaid's Tale. Or what is the subtitle on that? Christian Real Housewives of Salem or something?
I mean, essentially, it's a dystopian future where women aren't allowed to procreate. I don't quite follow it. It's a show my wife loves, so I knew it wasn't going to be for me.
Now,
yeah, isn't it like remember M. Night Shyamalan?
Then he goes on about M. Night Shyamalan because that's the only thing he knows about.
And then it turns out that they're really at an amusement park? The Handmaid's Tale.
Yes.
M. Night Shyamalan's Handmaid's Tale.
It's exactly not what The Handmaid's Tale is about, by the way.
It's the opposite.
It's all about a twist ending that you didn't expect because really time is different than you thought it was.
Now, The Handmaid's Tale, of course, is not only a hit television show that there was a lot of stuff written about. It was also a novel written in the mid-80s when Dennis Miller was supposed to be so in touch with culture. It won like multiple awards. It was already made into a film in the 90s, an opera, and now, obviously, a television series. So he didn't know what that was either.
Can we go on a little tangent about how I liked his self-proclaimed sidekick explanation of, like, yeah, I don't really know. It's like they're forced to procreate. Wife likes it. Yeah, exactly. Not interested. That was awesome. He's just like, yeah, my wife's always trying to talk with me about our emotional and sexual issues and watching The Handmaid. I'm just like, whatever. Dennis DMZ and I are recording. Sorry, honey. Bye.
So there it is. We have cracked the code. It turns out that what we were waiting for was right in front of us the whole time.
Already there.
So
bop, bop, bop.
That's right. The bop, bop, bop you seek is actually inside of you. And on Friday,
the Zen master of the irrelevant.
On Friday, we will bring on Andy Kindler, hopefully, and we will discuss this further. Also, now that we have a podcast that we can actually spend maybe 45 minutes listening to the entire thing. And
I'm wondering,
bit by
Sam,
bit.
If...
Oh, right,
remember
that
the
PU,
initial
right.
PU, we might need to resurrect that idea. That maybe actually, like a monthly pod we
oh
do.
Oh, my God.
I think you and I might need to do that.
Yes. All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, we're now going to move into the fun half of the program now that we have completed one of our, I would say, one of the journalistic tour de forces that we have been engaged in here in the course of the Majority
also,
Report.
Also, shouts to, I believe, Andy Kindler. On our internal investigative thread of Dennis Miller, I believe that Andy Kindler was, I believe he suggested, wait a second, isn't possible that that was the joke?
It's fascinating.
So incredibly deep insight from Andy Kindler on Millerology there.
All right, we're going to take a break, head into the fun half. And just a reminder, the show relies on your membership. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Today is Wednesday, which means yesterday was Tuesday. That means that last night was the Michael Brooks show. You can see it on YouTube. Waz, who was on last night?
Big Waz and Bree Joy.
Oh, Big Waz.
Wazney Lombre and Bree Joy Gray.
And you can subscribe to that on iTunes. And, of course, the Antifada is out. And you can find that at patreon.com/theantifada.
Indeed.
Check out Jamie's podcast stylings. Quick break. Oh, don't forget, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, tea, or chocolate. Hopefully you got that 30% off in April. But you can get 10% off now on the coffee you decided that you loved by going to justcoffee.coop and using the coupon code MAJORITY. Quick break. Be right back.